outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
Well, Kyle, how you doing? New year, new baby. My goodness, life must be good.
Life has been really good. It's been quite the exciting adventure. Last time I was on the podcast, baby hadn't arrived, and I think just a few days after we recorded that, baby was part of this world. So yeah, it's been quite the whirlwind. Christmas season was definitely a blur, to say the least.
Are you getting any sleep?
No, I'm starting to get some sleep, just because I have to go to work. And so Jess has been gracious enough to allow me to have about 6 hours. So that's been a huge gift. But yeah, my wife, she is a champ. She has not been getting very much sleep. Baby's feeding about every 2 hours right now. So
how fun. And that baby L, right?
Yep. Eliana Renee Rice.
Yeah. And she's doing well now. She had a little physical issues early on, but things have settled out.
We had some spooky stuff happen when she initially landed and got to spend 7 days in the NICU. But thankfully, her life was never in danger. It was more just concern about whether or not there was going to be some brain damage potentially, just because she had some really low oxygen levels initially. But everything sorted out, and she's doing very well, growing, passing all of her developmental standards and milestones, and so she's been doing great.
Oh, that's good to hear. And for those of you who don't remember, Kyle has been on the podcast a number of times, but not everybody remembers because maybe this is their first podcast. So Kyle's a good friend,
awesome.
Been a good friend for a long time, publisher at Blue Sheep Media along with his wife, and high school teacher, counselor, something. You do lots of stuff. Coach.
Yep, all of the above.
At a high school in Nebraska and joining us from Wyoming this afternoon where they live. So you live Absolutely. In Wyoming, work in Nebraska, podcast in California. That's quite a life you lead.
Absolutely. It's a fun one. It's an adventure.
Good. So excited about the new year?
I am. I'd love to hear. Actually, I haven't gotten to hear any new updates on how things are going in Kenya. Wasn't sure where they're landed or if you've heard any updates from them yet.
Yeah, we posted some stuff on Livestream. They're kind of past the crisis. I've gotten the food up there. They're rebuilding right now the agricultural things that got destroyed. And we also had some extra, so we sent them some money to help build a bigger warehouse for the water enterprise, which is part of our long-term strategy of getting them to be financially independent. So that's a big piece in that machine. So it was supposed to have been covered the first time, so we had a little miscommunication, something or other, but back on track with that now. I think things are looking
awesome.
Good. And you're going with me this summer? We're going to go see him?
Would love to.
Are you going to leave that little kid? Come?
Well, we would do that.
Okay, great.
Yep. Jess and I talked about that a little bit. So if that's on the table, would love to do that.
Oh, that'd be fun. Hey, I sent you a few weeks ago, actually, this little thing called 12 Symptoms of Spiritual Awakening. And I got it from Facebook post Contemplative Monk, I think. But I don't think it's original to him. I think it's been something that, the best I can tell, has come out of the kind of 12-step movement. I found it an interesting read just because it talks about, it's not specifically Christian, though I think it probably originated there. But it really talks about when we wake up spiritually, what does life begin to look like as an awakening happens in our heart? And I wouldn't necessarily love all of these. But I love a lot of them. A lot of them have been true in my own journey. And what I love about it is not really things you can kind of say, ooh, I'm going to develop that characteristic. It's kind of the fruit of, I think, a growing relationship of trust and love. And when that's growing, then these kinds of things tend to unfold. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of look at these a little bit and see what we got. So 12 symptoms of spiritual awakening. The first one is an increased tendency to let things happen rather than make them happen. What do you think of that? Is that part of your journey or no?
It really has been. I know that there's actually been some times where you've even helped counsel me through some seasons where, especially as a young working professional, the whole stick for the millennials was be intentional. If you want to be successful, you've got to make things happen. You've got to have this rigorous schedule. You've got to be out there and going and working super hard. If you want to make it, if you want to get up the ladder, if you want to get the notoriety, if you want to see those changes happen, then you've got to be that driven intentionality. And I remember actually the comment that you made to me when we were dialoguing some of this, and I don't even know if you remember this or not, but the comment that you made is be intentional in loving God and allow him to unpack everything else. That if you believe that God is where life is actually found, if he is the source of abundant life, then be intentional in pursuing that life and allow everything else to unfold. Allow him to unfold that abundant life that your heart has been really desiring. And so I would definitely agree with this. This has been, now granted, it's been hard to do at times, to let go and not try to make things happen and not be that forceful intentionality. But man, it's so much more exciting when I take a step back and allow God to unfold things as a result of our relationship.
Yeah, and it really is an argument that, you know, people who are more spiritual are couch potatoes and just lay around and don't do anything and just trust it all to work out. I like the tendency to let things happen. I see that a lot reflected in my prayer life. Where my prayer life 25 years ago was all about, okay, God, do this, and God, and really praying and spending hours of prayer trying to get some circumstance to change that never changed. And it was like, wow, that's a waste of time. If I'm going to try and get that to change, I'm going to spend all that energy and effort trying to shape, use prayer to shape reality to my desire. And I think I found more that, God is in the things I mostly pray against or used to. God's not all about my life being comfortable at every moment. So there's the freedom in my life now to go, okay, so this is a new curveball thrown at me. Not pray against the curveball, but pray inside of it. God, what is it that you're doing now? And being more aware that God works in things we don't like. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, and he's not all about, I don't know what our lives would look like if we got everything I wanted and my life was perfectly comfortable and easy. I imagine it probably wouldn't look like much. But yeah. This is where I find, it's not that I'm still not intentional. I won't do things to like get a new book out and, you know, make decisions to be active. But at the same time, I'm really trusting that God's at work in a greater way than I am, particularly in, things I don't control, except my attempts to control it through prayer. But things I don't control, I'm much more relaxed about, okay, if that unfolds now, I'll respond to that instead of trying to change that.
The cool thing about this that kind of comes to mind for me is it's more of an invitation to explore than like this drivenness to have to travel. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's not that that either one of us are not active or that we're not trying things or that we're not exploring things, but it's, for me, I guess it doesn't have this like panicked urgency anymore.
Yeah.
That I have to come through or it's not going to work out or it's going to be an epic failure if I don't come through.
Yeah. And I talk to other people a lot now and they're praying about, you know, a ministry or something going on in their life. And it's always like, they're trying to pray God give them this 5-year strategy. I'm always into saying, you know what, do the next thing he's put in front of you. Do that, do the next thing, walk through the next open door, initiate the next relationship that God's put in your life. Let that grow. See where, and I like to say, I think God's will unfolds in our responses to him in the day to day, rather than it comes as a 5-year plan that we're going to implement by following all these steps. It is following steps, but the steps kind of come one at a time. They don't come for me. Yeah. In the long range. Like, second one was frequent attacks of smiling. I like it. I like it because I have found more joy in being in this part of my journey than I did in the other part. And the people I hang out with who are on this journey of learning to live inside God's affection and love and growing trust in him and those things, there is a laughter and a smile about it, even when stuff is ugly and even when it hurts. Mm-hmm. There's the ability to realize there's something bigger going on and finding humor and gratefulness in the smallest things. And I've enjoyed this part of the journey for that more than anything else. There's a lot of smile, a lot of laughter, taking God seriously, but not taking ourselves so seriously, I guess.
There's a lot of science that backs that as well, that people that are able to laugh at their mistakes, to be able to even find humor in their failures. Not that there isn't pain and there isn't some turmoil that comes with that as well, but as you said, not to take themselves so seriously that you can't just say, well, that was a fun try. That didn't work out the way I saw that going, but okay, that's all right.
Yep.
And just enjoying it.
Number three, feelings of being connected with others and with nature. I one shift in my life definitely has been the last 25 years, it being from a task-oriented person to a people person. And I know people who knew me in my previous life will be shocked to hear that, because it was always about getting the program done, getting the work done, writing the book I'm working on. It was always task-oriented, and people were in the way for me. Mm. Just, you know, there were distractions. And this has definitely brought me more connected to that. And nature's not a big focus for me. I've always been a nature guy. I love walking in the woods, love a good sunset, love a nice rainbow in the sky, the stars at night. I enjoy nature already. I don't know that I enjoy it more or feel connected more, but I definitely have always felt that resonance with just the natural world and being part of it.
I think for me too, nature has been a huge part of the joy of Father and I just getting to spend time together. I still try to make it a fairly regular habit to go just by myself for even for a day and just go up into the woods or go hiking or just to get away. And that there's so much joy to be found in pausing and just checking in with my heart and in the midst of the beauty that's around me.
Do you find your connections with people too coming at a deeper level?
No, I would agree. For me, when I was growing up, because of my own wounds and because of some of my own past stuff, deep relationships weren't safe, because allowing somebody that close to where they could hurt my heart wasn't safe. And so I was very intentional about not allowing people in or not allowing people to see me. And yet, as the more that I've walked in the Father's love, the more it's freed me up to be vulnerable with who I am to others. And just how that has opened up some really powerful friendships that I would have never, never thought I would ever get into.
And why? Is it safer now? Or is it just, well, I don't know. Is it safer having those connections? Or are you less worried about your heart if somebody does stomp on it?
My primary identity and affirmation has shifted from the opinions of people around me to the love of my Father as the primary source. It's not that I don't receive that from others, but I think that has freed me up to feel safer, even because I've still been deeply wounded by people, even in this journey. And I've had very painful relationships, but it's worth the risk now. The joy of being able to have those connections and knowing that inevitably my heart is still in the overall care of my loving Father has really freed me up a lot more to enjoy those relationships and to take relational risk, whether it's successful or not. And there's been a lot of rich texture that's come as a result of that.
I like that worth the risk thing, because I think that's definitely true. What I've also found to be true is things that used to absolutely shred me emotionally don't anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have experienced betrayal even in the last year or so of my life. Somebody makes a promise, good friends, connection, and all of a sudden somebody, for whatever reason, throws it away and goes another direction and then cuts you out of their life. It's not even like, hey, yeah. Wayne, I'd like to re-talk about this because I'm not sure about it. But what I've noticed, when that used to devastate me for like days or weeks, it hurts, yes. But it's inside of God's, I guess, hands around my heart. So the wound isn't as deep or doesn't impact me as deeply. And it makes it easy to love again. And I've had experiences and collaborations where people would say, man, that I would never do it again if I were you. And I'd be going, yeah, you know, for you, for what you said earlier, it's worth it. When a collaboration does work, it's really worth it. It leads to something very beautiful. And where it doesn't work, if it's not so personally painful, it makes it easier to take the risk. Because, yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah, it's not fun. But you know what? It's not the end of the world, because God somehow made my heart more tender. So people cutting at it doesn't impact me as deeply or as long, which is kind of nice. Yeah. A tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fears based on past experience. Man, I don't even know if I think about this anymore. Fears of past experience. I think we just talked about that in some ways, but I don't go into anything going, okay, now this happened before, so I've got him. To me, it's always, okay, God, where's your fingerprint here? Where you open a door? What do you want? It's a new relationship, a new activity, a new something. I'm willing to invest my heart. And so I guess, act more spontaneously, but I'm not even having these thoughts about fears based on past experience. Whatever reason, I mean, I'm too old to have them, but I don't think about them.
This is a place that God and I are still, that I'm still learning to be loved by Him. You know, just this last week, there was a situation where there was a lot of uncertainty that was cast upon my career and my livelihood. And so there definitely was some angst there, even though I know, like, God has built such a beautiful testimony in both Jess and I's lives in regards to Him caring for us, providing for us, opening doors when they need to be opened. And yet there was still definitely fear there. And I really wrestling with not allowing that fear to overtake the history, the relational history that God's been logging with Jess and I. So I would say that that's still definitely something that I experience. Is it to the level that it used to be? No.
Yeah, that's the thing, because I think some of these, the tendency, the kind of, this is becoming, this freedom to act more spontaneously with God is growing greater than the fears based on past experience. And I think that's how we, it's not an either or kind of thing. I think everything about a transformational journey is like a rheostat. It's a dimmer switch or a brightener switch. It's not something you flip a switch. It's one thing or the other, but one grows greater and the other grows less. And that's why I like how these have been worded. It's more than a tendency to things rather than I don't have any fears anymore, but the tendency, I don't let the fear control me.
And yet I feel like at times it's projected, especially in the institutional Christian world, that if we truly are faithful, we shouldn't have any fear ever. There isn't like the grace to allow that loving relationship to continue to, as you said, to brighten that light, or that expectation of love in that relationship. Like it's okay. Now you're the faithful. And so now you should have no fear at all.
If there's no fear, then there's no courage, right?
Yeah.
If there isn't the, oh, I could get hurt here. I could, but I'm going to go anyway. Then there really isn't courage if there isn't also the awareness that this could go horribly wrong. But I'm going to continue to follow anyway. I think if you don't have that level of fear from time to time, then you're just living in a comfort zone. You're not risking outside anything. Because I find myself regularly, God invites me into something, and I get that little knot in your stomach. It's, oh, this is beyond me.
Yeah.
And but I'm much more willing to go and not so freaked out about, yeah, but it went bad last time. Yeah, so what? It went good the time before that. So who knows?
Yeah.
Number six, an unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment.
This has been a process for me.
I hear you.
Both Jess and I, we're both pretty futuristic people. And so being able to enjoy the present has been such a journey. I think that's been one of the primary love lessons that God has been growing Jess and I in our marriage on, if I was to say. To be able to not worry about either the past or worry about how it's going to transcribe in the future or how this is going to translate, but to really find joy in that moment. And when you can, oh my goodness, as God's been opening this up for Jess and I, it has opened a level of love between her and I.
That's great.
And the people around us, and because we were just missing so much. It's been a lot of fun. It's been uncomfortable and very outside of my comfort zone.
That's why I'm always asking, what does he mean by enjoy? I don't enjoy every moment I'm in. But one thing I've noticed about me now, I'm more present in every moment I'm in. I can really give myself to the moment, whether it's painful or joyful or whatever. I'm not, and they say most people either live in the future with their fears or the past with their anxieties. I'm much more in the present with whomever I'm with, and I can just be with them and be in this moment and let it go as long as it needs to go. So I find that's true, but I don't always enjoy each moment. Some moments I'm in are, you know, kind of painful, or they're kind of at risk, or they're kind of like walking a tightrope wire and going, okay, God, I don't know what we're doing here. So I don't enjoy that part of it, but I am able to be in the moment more. And that's helpful to me. I was a guy that didn't live in the moment, because I might be talking to you, but I'm writing my next book. I've got a paragraph in my head and I'm editing it while I'm being with you. And that didn't lead to very good things on either side of those two things. A loss of ability to worry.
And I think that as we were talking before, it's on a relational spectrum. because as that trust is grown, then the presence of worry, I think, decreases. It's not that you're not going to have worry in your life by any means, but I think as I was just listening about the parable where Jesus is talking about how you sweep your room clean and you make it all nice and presentable. You get the bad out, you sweep your own room all clean, but then you don't fill it with anything good. And then the evil is allowed to seep back in and it comes back with even more, and you're in a worse off situation than you were before. And I feel like as you walk in faith with God, he's slowly filling that space with different things that allow you to rest in that trust. That he's laying down those relational landmarks that are like, oh, okay, yeah, I can look back on that relational landmark. And yes, is this situation, is it bringing that knot up in my stomach again? Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But the angst isn't there, I guess.
I would like to lose my ability to worry. I really would. The moments I most hate in my life is 2:30 in the morning, had to get up, go to the bathroom, and got back, and my mind was working before I could fall asleep again. And it's usually over something I haven't sorted out yet, something I'm trying to work out with someone or with something. And then I get thinking about it, and then I can't get back to sleep. What I do notice is there are fewer things that I worry about. There are things where God's trust encompasses. I don't worry about our financial reality, Sarah. And I don't worry about, you know, travel. I don't worry about where I go. I don't worry about those things. But I do have this marvelous ability to worry about things that are still beyond my trust zone, where I'm kind of in a different area. So I'd like to lose that ability to worry, but I still have it. I just don't use it as often or as in many places, which is nice. That part's nice, but I still have this ability to worry.
Where do you see where is he expanding your experience of his love in that area right now? Like, how do you see him changing that in those specific areas, like in some of the specific areas that you talked about that you still are leaning towards the experience of worry?
Yeah, I don't know that I see him change it. I think there's times I'm laying there awake at night trying to process something, and then days later, it's not even something I'm thinking about anymore. So I don't see that change, but it does change. Somehow something moves. God makes himself known. Some other's fingerprints inside whatever it is. Or I've just come to rest in, I can't fix this, so I'm not going to try anymore. Whatever. So I think it's different depending on what it is. Whether it's I've got to make a decision and I don't know which way it's going yet. Or it's a relationship kind of hassle where someone seems to think I'm a horrible person and I want to find reconciliation with them, but there's just no way because the accusations never end. You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
So you kind of wrestle with, boy, how would we fix that? And I think a lot of it is that because I'm a reconciler guy. I'm a bridge. I'll apologize. I'll do anything to fix a relationship. But it's got to come from two sides. You can't fix it on your own. And so I'm getting better. I think less days of worry where I can more easily put that in his hands. And I think I'm, you know, in the middle of the night, my defenses aren't up. I'm not ready to fight this thing. I just want to go back to sleep. And I'm too tired to realize I've got anxiety here. So, I own it because it's there. But so I see it changing. But I don't know that there's anything I'm doing to help it change other than Jesus, the prayer I always pray, God, what is it about your love? I don't know. If I knew it, I wouldn't be worried here. That's my number one anxiety prayer right there. And I'll pray it for days, for weeks if I have to, until I can wake up and that not disturb me. Even if it's unresolved still, that just doesn't get to anything in me. Number eight is a loss of interest in conflict.
Wow. What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? I'm definitely a lot less interested in conflict. I used to be a fighter. So you want to come at me, I'm going to come at you. We'll fight about stuff. I can prove you wrong. I'll, you know, quick mouth ability to get into conflict and mix it up. My heart's a bridge builder now. I'm not an interested in conflict, interested in helping resolve it if that's possible. But I don't enjoy one-upping people anymore like I used to. I don't enjoy adding to the conflict and making it worse. And I used to. I used to enjoy a good fight, a good tussle. If I'm right, you're wrong, and that's just okay with it. But now, no, I'm not interested in fighting. In fact, I tend to move away from those relationships that are conflict-based. If that's the nature of your life, and I know people who are totally conflict-based. They are upset about everything. they feel so miserable about their life. They're always pointing fingers at other people and condemning them. You know what? I just avoid those relationships. I'm not as interested in that subject matter as I used to be. Any comments from you on eight?
No, I would say
I don't think you've ever been a fighter. You're pretty gentle. You're an intense guy in terms of direction for your heart and life. I noticed that about you, but you're not, you don't seem to be a fighter. You're a peacemaker anyway, just at your heart level. Yeah. So you probably never loved conflict to start with.
I think part of that is honestly growing up in the home that I did and watching a lot of conflict and just my personality, but also just intentionality and saying, I just don't want to live that way.
Yeah, that's good. So, and this is really part, I think 8 and 9 are somewhat connected. 9 is a loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. Like seeing what somebody does. Oh, I know why they did that. In fact, it bothers me now when other people, like I know almost every assumption we make about someone else's motives are wrong.
Yeah.
It's based on a very limited fact set from their life. So we're going to make, well, if I did the same thing, I would have done it from this motive. So I put that motive on them. And motives are easy to condemn people. You say, well, they're just that way. And what I've learned is people interpreting my motives are almost always wrong. And I think it's also true that me interpreting other people's motives is almost always wrong. It disturbs me when other people do it. And I'll usually try to find a way to say, do we really know that? I mean, yeah, I can understand why you might think that's true, but really, do you think that's the motive behind that? Because it just usually isn't. And even Paul talks about Corinthians about, I don't even judge my own motives, man. Only God knows the heart. And I don't even judge my own because I could be wrong about that. And I think that's true. Cognitive dissonance says I can do anything and justify it.
Yeah.
And so a loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. And actually the next two are almost the same thing. A loss of interest in judging others, which is, that's usually how we judge others, is we judge their motives. We judge why they're doing what they're doing. Or a loss of interest in judging myself. This, I think all three of these are really good at just interpreting the actions of others, judging myself. This is an area that I just don't live in anymore. And this is where my condo was parked, in this land of judging myself and others and trying to be so righteous that my motives are pure and yours are not. And man, I tell you, it's been a good 10, 15 years since I've lived in that condo. And I'm glad I let the lease go on that thing. I'm really glad. And it's not that I don't fall into that now and then, but this loss of interest, I am not interested in interpreting other people's actions, and I'm not interested in judging others or judging myself. I'm willing to say, God, you lead me, show me what you want to do.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the primary keys of what really initiated change in the relationship between my dad and I. Because I had such a horrific view of his heart and of his motives. And when God started to untangle me from that and said, hey, I want you to just pause and start. What if you were to start with the assumption that his heart is good? What if you started there and allow me to unveil to you what his motives were? And that, oh man, you want to talk about a lot of humility. Yeah. Because I was way, way wrong and got to see aspects and characteristics of my dad that I didn't think were possible. And yet saw a deep care and a deep passion for his family and a willingness to sacrifice himself for the sake of those that he loved. But I never would have seen any of that if I would have maintained that intense interest in interpreting his actions and judging him for them.
That's good. Cause I help people deal with that with God because we judge his motives, right? And if,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, God doesn't do what I think he ought to do. So maybe he doesn't love me, maybe he doesn't care, maybe he doesn't know me. And people, unfaith always comes from that. And to get, if people could just believe that about God, could you believe that I'm good and that I love you? Maybe not the way you want to be loved. Maybe I'm not going to give, you're going to find out with that L growing up, you're not going to give her everything she wants. And she's going to, like the first day she looks at you, you don't love me, daddy. I mean, that hurts till you get used to it. Then you realize that kids all say that stuff. But yeah, if we could just start with the premise, that's lovely. You know, God is good. Or somebody else, maybe their motives are really good towards me. And I'm just interpreting it because it's not coming across in a way that makes sense to me. And so instead of maybe sorting that out, I'll it's easier to accuse them of being judgmental or being angry or being whatever. Yeah. And the last one here, gaining the ability to love without expecting anything in return. Which I think in some sense, the very definition of love, right? If love's quid pro quo, if I invite you over for dinner and then I'm waiting for you to invite me over for dinner. And if you don't, then I don't think you, then it's not really love. If love needs a return from you to validate it, I think I'm getting a lot better at this, a lot freer to just love extravagantly and not worry about what comes back from them or from anyone else. And that's partly because I get a lot of love from God, get a lot, lot there. I've got a lot of healthy people around me who also share a lot of love with me.
I really like what you said when you said that you receive a lot of love from God. And I think that's a huge starting point is when that heart tank of ours, that love tank that God's placed in our heart, when that's so depleted, then it's almost like this desperation around us just trying to quid quo pro that love, and I'm going to give out love, but I desperately need it to come back because I don't have much to give anyway. You know, when we're coming from that overflow of healthy, loving relationships in our lives that don't have those expectations or don't have those pressures on them, yeah, I think it does free us up to live from a reserve of love versus a desperation for love.
Yeah, and the phrase expectations are always resentments waiting to happen. Even if someone really cares about you and you care about them, but you expect that, you know, you kind of gave them a cold shoulder last week and you thought that would merit a phone call, but then you didn't get one, so they don't really care. Then we spiral into these weird expectations will always kill you.
Yeah.
And the honesty and openness of just even not kind of cold shouldering it and waiting for a response, just say to someone, hey, you know, I felt a little hurt last week by this, or I felt whatever, and see what comes back. And I think our relationships would be a lot more healthy if we kept the expectations of all kinds out of it and just lived inside of what really is and the freedom that not of all the, and I've said this to people, you know, of all the people that Sarah and I love and extend our life to, I think maybe less than say 15 to 20% does love come back to us from them. And that's okay. I wouldn't love you with the expectation to have something back, or we're just going to get hurt anyway. And then we're going to really skew up what love is, because love, I think at its heart, it loves without expectation. Otherwise, it's not love. Then we're just manipulating each other, because I'm doing something nice for you, so you'll do something nice for me, and that fills up some broken place in my life. That's where we've got to like run to God and say, okay, God, fill up that, what you call love tank or whatever, fill that up. So that I don't mope through the world trying to find in other people what I can only find in you. And that does take, I mean, I realize people say, gosh, I don't know that. It's worth finding out how to experience that.
Yes, it is.
And it's worth finding a friend to say, you know, this is where I struggle with love. Could you help me find my way into that from him? Because I think he wants to do that. You know what I loved about this list, Kyle, just looking at it as a whole, is just, this is more of a transformational journey. This is more what life with God will produce over time. Not, okay, this is a list of 12 rules. Now I'm going to follow. I'm going to stop worrying. I'm going to stop judging others. I'm going to stop. Because we just don't have the power to do that stuff.
No.
If the anxiety there, the tension's there, the insecurity's there, the need for love is there, the expectations are there. The only way I can be on this kind of a journey is to let him change me, to find where, and this is what I think living loved looks like. Some of the things, I don't think this is all it is. I thought, maybe I should do my own list someday, but I probably won't. To me, this is the kind of thing that living love does in our hearts. It takes us out of that religious mindset, which almost all the religious-y kind of stuffs embellish all these things.
Yeah.
But love disentangles them. Love disarms them so that they're not so impactful in our lives. I got this from a friend this week. I want to read this to you because I think a transformational life is where we want to live. And this was somebody I just asked how they were doing. Someone I've known for a long time, been in church settings with them. They've been in leadership of a variety of kinds. And then they've stepped out of that a few years back and they've just been on a different journey. So I just asked, you know, how's the Jesus journey going? And this is the response I got. This is from a woman Sarah and I have known for a long, long time. I'm changing in ways I never thought I would. Mostly good, I think. The hard lines of morality have moved a bit. My heart has softened to those still in the institution. One of your podcasts was helpful in confirming that recently. I feel far less judgmental. In general, it's a less pressured, more spontaneous, and enjoyable walk with God. God the Father has become more of a player, odd term, but I can't think of another, than just Jesus. Though he is still my example, he always said his intention, speaking of Jesus, was to lead us to his Father. I think I've finally connected there, and it's good. I look forward to continued learning in an environment where no one else is looking over my shoulder, giving their approval or disapproval, and presenting themselves as more qualified or further down the road. Though I know there are others, elders, that God intends to use, I have found that the Holy Spirit really is a good teacher all by himself. Who knew? This is somebody, you know, you've been in church ministry with for years, and so much of what she wrote here expresses my own journey, you know, and some of the things we heard in this is less judgmental, more enjoyable, more in the moment, more connected to the Father than just Jesus being our example and protector and that, but that friendship with God really happening in the heart. And to me, that's a transformational life. And I want to ask you, come to the end of this, what do you do to nurture that transformational life in your journey?
That's a great question.
I spent all afternoon working on it, man. So I could try and trap you.
Both Jess and I are very intentional to continue to connect with community around us. We've cultivated some great friendships that are on similar journeys. Some of them are still part of a traditional Sunday morning gathering. Some of them are not. And being able to live life with them in a transparent way really continues to challenge Jess and I, and specifically me in my own personal journey. That's a huge resource for me. I love listening to others' relationships and how they experience God. So I love listening to podcasts because I love listening to different ways that people around the world are experiencing his life. Because, oh man, the longer I've lived and the more places I've gone, the more I realize that I definitely do not have even a sliver of a corner on the market of what it means to live in God's life. There's so much out there to discover. And so that's been a real joy. I've actually had quite a bit of a passion for his scripture that has started to come back up again. And that was a major area that I really struggled with just because of the grind of scripture. I mean, I really felt like a Pharisee, you know, where I knew it pretty well. I could quote you verses, I could give you context, and yet it was lifeless to me. And over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of joy that's been coming from learning and growing in my understanding of culture and scripture and different contexts and different ways to look at scripture and different ways to interpret it and to dive into the word. And so that's been a joy for me. I'm a big journal person. I love to journal. My journals are a transcription of my conversation with God. So that's been for a long time a real pillar for he and I, because I'm able to go back and I've got journals since I came to truly know him relationally from 2006 on. I have a pretty detailed transcript of our conversation with each other over the years.
Cool.
And so that's been a lot of fun. And then I think the final thing would be I really spend intentional time by myself just meditating with him. No distractions. I intentionally find places that have no cell phone service, no electricity.
You can't shut those things off too. You don't have to wait, go, there's no service. You can just shut that phone right off.
Well, I know, but I still have, it's a helpful barrier for me.
Yep.
yep. So that's something that I really lean hard on as well, is getting that time by myself with God, just to enjoy his adventure, to enjoy time with him. So
good. Yeah. Those are, we're kind of getting to the end of this, but I think the thing that's really helpful to me is there's voices around you that are more the religious voices of conformity. The Bible says this, you should do this. And that I tend to stay away from those voices, not people I can't love, because I can, but for deep conversations, I want to talk to people that are more on transformational journeys, because that feeds me. When I see them letting God change something or this nudge in their life, and they go down this road and it tweaks something in their heart. And when I'm in those conversations, that keeps encouraging me into that space of growing affection, growing trust, not the need to control, the joy to let God unfold his glory in me. So yeah, we're gonna have to cut it off there just because we're late, Kyle. Thanks for joining me today. Early in 2020, I did a short podcast last week, but this is the first one I've done with someone else. And
thank you. It's been great.
Enjoy that
Always
new baby.
A joy.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.